Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Oliver Kinner.
And I'm Ian McAllister, and this is Brainwaves episode 142, bringing you the best in tabletop gaming news. These are the headlines for the week of the 13th of May, 2024. CMON sales flatline. Tabletop Games Designer Association is alive. And Union throws UK tabletop a lifeline. All this and more on this episode of Brainwaves.
We are starting with some lighter news. CMON, a global tabletop games company responsible for some of the biggest games on Kickstarter, both financially and the size of what you get, have announced their sales figures for 2023, and they've come out roughly flat, falling by $200,000 to $45.1 million in 2023, down from $45.3 million in 2022. 58% of the company's sales came from Kickstarter and around 40% from wholesalers. During the same period, profits increased by over $240,000 to $755,948 in 2023, up from $510,101 in 2022. Now, I guess when you look at CMON and the sort of Kickstarter campaigns they have run in the past, and as we just said, not just the big boxes you get out of it, but actually how much they sort of pledge-wise have sort of collected.
Yeah.
It is actually quite surprising that it's, well, nearly 60%. You'd think it's more like 70, 80, maybe even higher percentage. So it's almost only half, and getting 40% from wholesalers. It's interesting. Yeah. So they're obviously making money by selling games rather than just the Kickstarter campaigns.
Yeah, I guess more goes to retail than we think. And some of those games actually come out, like things like Marvel United and games like that in the recent past. And obviously, CMON just took on some games from Mythic as well.
Yeah.
So, I guess more of those go to wholesale and retail than we thought.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of other very interesting news, Ian.
Yeah, back in episode 133, we told you about the formation of the Tabletop Game Designers Association. This is an American-based organization that wants to help designers navigate the sometimes complicated world of getting games published. They set out to offer legal advice, dispute moderation, contract reviews, and more as the organization grows. The three founding members are Elizabeth Hargrave, designer of Wingspan and the Fox Experiment, Senfeng Lim, co-designer of Mind Management, and Jing Ashi, Blood in the Banquet Hall and a psychology teacher, and Jeff Engelstein, co-founder of the Ludology podcast, designer of the Expanse board game, Space Cadets, and Super Pinball Arcade. Now, we're pleased to announce that the organization has now officially launched and is offering its services. On the site, the organization says it will advocate for all and is pursuing the following aims: to standardize information on royalty reports, have game designers listed like authors on large online retailers like Amazon, define terms like designer, developer, graphic designer, artist, editor, etc. for game credits, set an expectation of advances for all aspects of design work, including expansions and exploration, establish standards for non-game rights like electronic versions, merchandise, or film and TV, standardize what returns to the designer when licensing rights lapse, connect journalists and media writing about tabletop games and game design with appropriate experts, and work with institutions such as the Strong Museum of Play and Stanford University to preserve tabletop gaming history. The organization has three tiers of membership offering various services and has targeted everyone from designers just starting out in their journey to established names. The website also offers free resources for new designers, so it may prove to be a good starting point if you're just thinking about putting a game together. Thanks very much to Corey from our Discord for bringing us this update. Now, there are similar organizations in Germany. Oliver can pronounce the name of that one for me.
The Spiele Autorenzunft, the SAZ, or SAZ, I think. Elizabeth Harvey actually called it on the postcards recently. And then there's someone in France as well. I don't know.
Yeah, there is.
What the organization called?
I don't know what the French one is called, but I know it exists.
Yeah, so as you say, it's just great to see that happening in the States as well now. We need something in the UK, but maybe the States will be sort of the template for something happening in the UK. Let's hope. And also, actually, I noticed when you were talking about, when you're listing what they were trying to pursue, they said about designers being listed like authors. And that's, as a German, you know, in Germany, we call game designers game authors. So it is very comparable. So, you know, I love that. That seems to be happening in other languages as well now that, yeah, game designers are actually now considered like authors and get sort of similar rights and similar concepts. And yeah.
Cool.
Nice to see.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, actually, talking about the UK, Oliver.
Yes. Now, finally, in our headlines, a piece of news we picked up just a couple of hours before recording. Once more, Corey from our Discord came through for us and brought us this to our attention. The Independent Workers Union of Great Britain, that's IWGB, and the Game Workers branch within that voted on the 28th of March to accept members from the tabletop and board game sections of the industry. Now, this established the first union for tabletop workers in the UK. From the press release,
the Game Workers branch of the IWGB is a worker-led democratic trade union that represents and advocates for UK game workers' rights. With this vote, the union makes clear their support and acceptance of all game workers, regardless of field or industry.
This branch of the organisation has seen rapid expansion after several high-profile computer game studios were shuttered over the last few months. Austin Kelmore, chair of the IWGB Game Workers branch, said,
"I think everyone should be in a union because we are stronger together than we are alone. As for how we will approach the tabletop industry, that's up to the members who are in the industry itself. Each industry and workplace is slightly different, so having the workers themselves lead the effort is one of the most important things for them to make the changes they most want."
We have reached out to the IWGB to see if we can get an interview about the benefits it will bring to workers in the tabletop games industry. We hope to bring that on the next cast. So as I said, yeah, and now things happening in the UK as well, which is great to see. And obviously, this is now the Game Workers branch, and hence the link to the sort of video game industry, computer games, studios being shut and things. So it's nice that they now, well, there's more, even more overlap between computer games and board games nowadays. And yeah, seeing absolutely. That sort of go through the sort of the legal side or the workers' rights side is nice to see as well. So yeah, let's see what they have to say. I hope you can bring them on as an interview.
Yeah, I've just reached out to them just about an hour or so before recording. I've sent them an email, so I'm hoping to get an interview with them, maybe sort of 5-10 minutes for the next cast. And it's certainly interesting to see that as the industry's growing, we're seeing more of these sort of formal sort of workers' rights organizations form to protect people who work in those industries. It's great to see. It's good that, that's happening alongside the growth of the industry rather than an afterthought later on as things get bigger. Because as Oliver's mentioned, we're seeing massive layoffs in the computer game industry right now. Like Microsoft has just closed a few very big studios responsible for titles such as like Prey and Hi-Fi Rush and very big popular titles that are now just gone. So yeah, hopefully we can get a bit of protection for some tabletop industry workers. And if that kind of thing happens to them, they'll have a bit of recourse.
Definitely.
We'll bring you more on that on the next cast, I hope.
Now, on to the updates.
Now, folks, over the last year, we have brought you news and updates on the company Mythic Games. A once well-regarded Kickstarter-focused publisher, in recent years, the company has come under fire for delayed campaigns and frequently double or even triple-dipped into backers' wallets as they struggled to deliver projects and sought out extra cash in order to deliver their games. The last time we reported on them was back in episode 136, when Simon, who we mentioned earlier in the cast, had taken over two of Mythic's projects in their entirety. Thanks to Adam Richards from Punchboard in the UK, who forwarded us the email detailing what we are about to describe. Rainbow Six Siege, a board game based on the popular computer game franchise Rainbow Six, has been one of those much-delayed projects from Mythic. Now the game is starting to reach backers, the company is contacting reviewers. They're offering to send a free copy of the game out to reviewers for them to play and review. Normally, we wouldn't be surprised by this. Oliver and I are both familiar with this kind of thing happening all the time because we're critics. It is run-of-the-mill for the industry for games to come out like that and for critics to be contacted. But the company dipped into backers' wallets after the campaign ended in order to help with shipping costs. And now they're sending out games completely for free to critics. On top of that, the email sent to reviewers sort of begs them to ignore the company's reputation and instead concentrate on the gameplay. I will do a screenshot of that email that Adam sent to us. One other thing to mention about that email is that Mythic managed to send out the email to everyone with everyone's email addresses visible. So the email I have seen has got about 50 to 60 different reviewers' email addresses. Some names I recognize in there. Completely unhashed, completely available. That's a massive internet security no-no. Don't do that. That's terrible. No,
absolutely awful.
I've not personally had this email. I don't think you have either, Oliver.
No, I haven't. I'm rather jealous.
Yeah, I'm sort of jealous.
I'm not really.
Yeah, I'm not a big enough reviewer to like be contacted by them, but and neither is Oliver apparently. But I wouldn't have touched this with a 10-foot barge pole anyway. The whole debacle over the game and the company has been horrible for all the backers. I don't want any part of that. And also, by the time you get your review out, will there be any stock to buy of this incredibly limited game?
Absolutely. Like, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, first of all, you're asking for more money to ship out these copies.
For money. That's the thing. They're not.
No, but I mean, originally asking the backers.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
To get the Kickstarter done. And yet you clearly have a few dozen copies lying around to send out
more.
Free.
There's at least 50 or 60 reviewers, so there must be a good number of copies they've got.
It's rather, I mean, if I was a backer, I'd be even more hurt now. But there we go, just bringing you the news. And I really, words, I don't even know what to say about this. It's just, like, how low can you go?
I mean, we've talked about Mythic being on the brink of collapse for some time, and it really seems like they're struggling incredibly badly. I know there's an article recently on BoardGameWire in the last day or so about Funforge and Monumental as well.
Yeah.
Not delivering and like being continuously delayed, but copies being out in retail over last year and over Christmas because the Funforge had a deal with Asmodee.
Yeah.
Put the game out anyway. So backers are incredibly angry, and rightly so. It's just a complete mess at the moment. And we're still seeing basically fallout from the sort of heights of the pandemic and sort of the COVID crisis when we saw like shipping costs go through the roof, and that impacted a lot of companies.
All of those logistical issues and costs have risen. So,
if you're a Mythic backer, we sympathize with the horror you're going through. And if you ever see a Mythic project, don't back it. That's our advice. Now on to the rest of the news and something slightly more upbeat from Germany, Oliver.
Yes, we're talking about the Spiel des Jahres support program, something you might not be aware of. So since 2012, the Spiel des Jahres Association, which you probably know because of the Spiel des Jahres Awards that comes out every year, they have been financially supporting groups and institutions to enable them to run board game-related activities and events, as well as to maintain board game libraries. Now, for 2024, the association has confirmed that it will be able to support 85 projects with funding of around €73,000. One of the projects receiving funding is a youth committee of the Protestant Church community in Sommerhausen, Lower Franconia, where four young people train others to become volunteer rules teachers. As a group, the youth workers and volunteers go to local kindergartens and regularly play with children aged 3 to 6. Additionally, €24,000 will be allocated to scientific projects at the universities in Bonn and Cologne, as well as to the German Games Archive, which is run by Nuremberg Museums. The German Games Archive is a historical collection owned by Dieter Menzenkamp from Detmold and comprises more than 5,000 games from over 300 years of gaming history, which have been collected and catalogued over decades. The collection is particularly known for its diversity and the excellent condition of many objects, which provide comprehensive insights into social, political, and cultural structures of the past. As part of a special exhibition at the Toy Museum, a variety of objects with magnificent illustrations, thematic diversity, and uniqueness in form and content will be shown. The exhibits include evidence of cultural change and human action, ranging from the Industrial Revolution to World War II and into the 1950s. So just to put it into context, so Spiel des Jahres is the Spiel des Jahres that you know about, the awards that come out every year, awarding the children's games, we always struggle with translating this, but sort of the connoisseur game titles and things like that. And obviously the association is doing a lot more, so their goal has been for a long time to try and bring people to the masses and make the modern hobby still as popular as traditional games have been for a long time and still are. But they'll do more work like this. And it's great to see that we're looking at, what is it, 97,000 euros or so being invested over a year into 85 projects, whether it's like youth projects or museums, scientific stuff.
Yeah.
Historic, collections of games. It's just, it's amazing how much is actually going on behind the scenes. So I'm glad we could bring this story to you.
Yeah, I've never heard of the German Games Archive until you brought that story to our attention, Oliver, and it sounds fascinating. I'd love to visit the Toy Museum and see what they're called.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds absolutely fascinating.
No, 300 years of gaming history. Yeah.
But we're not done with Germany quite yet.
No, we're talking about the Deutsche Spielepreis next. And we've covered the Spiel des Jahres many times on the show, but it would be folly to assume that this is the only significant German tabletop game prize. Every year, the Deutsche Spielepreis is also given out through a public vote on Spielessen's site. You can vote for any game released in German language between 1st of May 2023 and 30th of April 2024. So German language meaning obviously released in Germany, Austria, Switzerland. There's a full list of the possible titles you could vote for on the Spielessen website. Voters can make 5 choices, ranking them from 1st to 5th, where each game is given a number of points based on their position. 5 points for the first place, 1 point for the 5th place. And you can also vote on the best children's game. The only caveat is you have to have an address in a German-speaking country, I believe. So that's the only limit there. Voting is open, though, until the 31st of July, 2024. So, another German game award, maybe not as famous as the Spiel des Jahres, rather.
Yeah.
But, I think people may have heard about the Deutsche Spielepreis because it's linked to the Spielmesse.
Yeah, it's very closely linked to that prize. And it's just a sort of different perspective on sort of German games, which is great.
Now, I wonder whether the next game or game-related news has anything to do with the Deutsche Spielepreis, or what's happening here, Ian?
No, absolutely not. Last year, we reported on the search for the eventual discovery of the One Ring. No, not the Ring of Power from Lord of the Rings, but a unique version of a card in Magic the Gathering from the set inspired by those books. That card eventually sold to Post Malone for $2 million US dollars, and at the time was the most expensive single Magic the Gathering card to have ever been sold. Well, it has not taken long for a new card to take that crown. A Black Lotus card from the original Magic the Gathering set has sold in a private auction for $3 million US dollars. The card was rated as pristine by CGC Cards, one of the grading companies that folk use when getting their cards assessed. CGC Cards Vice President Matt Quinn said,
"Seeing it in this condition, it is the top of the pyramid when it comes to collectible card games. The condition? Top of the pyramid as well."
The Black Lotus is a card sought after not only for its rarity, but also for the possibility that there are still some out there tucked away in a booster box waiting to be opened. Yep, there seems to be no end to the value for collectible card games as people like Post Malone send prices absolutely skyrocketing. I am sure we're going to see something beat that $3 million within the next year. I would not be surprised at all. There's a lot of very rare cards out there in some of the big card games like Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! That haven't really made that an appearance yet in terms of the sort of $1 million stakes. It tends to be the Magic Gathering cards that have gone that high. But with collectible card games coming back now in some force, we've got Disney Lorcana, we've got Star Wars Unlimited, the Warlord CCT is making a reappearance on Kickstarter. For those folk who are around in the 90s and remember that one. There seems to be a resurgence in collectible card games, so there's going to be interest in older versions of the cards, and that's bound to push prices a bit higher.
I think so, and recently, certainly saw it on the BBC News website, there was a Pokemon card collection that fetched
£55,000.
I don't know how many cards were in that and what there were, but still, we're talking thousands of pounds potentially. Yeah. Oh yeah, here we go. It's a 2,407 card collection, including 10 complete sets, so... Yeah, so how much is that per card for £55,000 per 2,500 cards? Well, you can do the math. It's a lot of money.
it's a good amount of cash. And I think we've covered before a Pokemon auction on a sort of a US version of the Antiques Roadshow as well.
Yeah.
Like a collection being sold there. Yeah, it's if you've got those cards sitting around in a shoebox, you might want to get them out and see if they're worth any cash.
Indeed, and maybe get into the next collectible card game that's coming out, and hopefully that's going to be the new expensive set in the future. Who knows?
With the caveat of like, maybe. Do not invest in classical card games. Exactly, like, yeah. As someone who lived through the 90s CCG glut, a lot of those card games hit the dust and are worth. Yeah.
Prices may go up as well as down.
Prices may go up as well down. But we're sticking with cards for a moment, Oliver.
Yes, a recent Japanese Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament broke the world record for largest trading card game tournament. Now, this is not the number of cards, but the number of participants. The tournament had 7,443 participants and took place over 2 days at the Tokyo Big Sight International Exhibition Center. Guinness awarded the record to Konami at the tournament. The record was last set in 2012 by another Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament in Long Beach, California, US, which had 4,363 participants. So almost double, not bad going. I'm trying to imagine what that number of people looks like in
a there's some pictures on the article that we'll link to from ICV2. It's quite impressive. It's a very big hall with a lot of people playing card games.
Well, clearly Yu-Gi-Oh! Is still really popular.
Oh, yeah, huge. Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned actually the number of cards there. There's an interesting thing with Yu-Gi-Oh! Which is like most collectible card games do what are called rotations. So like the cards that are legal for tournament play cycle rounds so they can produce cards. And so the design space is kept relatively small in terms of like new cards they can bring in. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is not like that, as I understand it. There are a few banned cards throughout its history, but effectively any card that's been printed from Yu-Gi-Oh! Right from its beginning to now is legal.
Wow.
So it's huge. Potential card base is massive.
Yeah.
Absolutely massive.
Amazing.
Yeah. A game I've never played, but is still incredibly popular.
So moving on from this tournament, on to jobs, opportunities, and events.
Yes, folks, we'd just like to remind you about the Tabletop Jobs group on Facebook. There's lots of good opportunities there if you're looking to get into the industry, not necessarily as a designer, but jobs like graphic designers, that kind of thing, they're all on there. So go and give that a look. There's also an opportunity for our Canadian listeners as well, or our listeners that may have game design friends in Canada. FallCon is a 3-day convention in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and it's taking place from the 23rd to 25th of August, 2024. As part of the convention, there is a game design award you can take part in. The competition costs $30 Canadian to enter, and you need to fill out an online submission and submit a video pitching your game. The video should contain a rule summary of the game, along with a pitch about why you think the game is unique. The finalists will be announced on the 1st of July and will be given free entry to the convention. The deadline for entry is the 19th of May, so just a few days after this cast comes out, so you've only got a few days left to get your entry in. The winner is awarded $200 Canadian and the Canadian Game Design Award and will be announced at the convention. Best of luck if you enter, folks.
Yeah, best of luck.
And we'd just like to take a little moment to give a shout out to our patrons for continuing to support us, especially our executive producers, Kevin Bertram from Fort Circle Games, James Naylor from Naylor Games, and Sean Newman from the Gamelot team. Thank you, everyone who supports the cast financially. It really helps out with funding the podcast and the site. You can join them for just $1 a month on our Patreon, and there's various other ways to support us, including getting dice from FanRoll. We've put a link to our affiliate code in the show notes. Various of the RPG articles I put out on the site as well have got affiliate links to Drive Through RPG, which gives us a bit of money towards buying new games that we can review for you. So do check those out, and there's a few other direct contribution options there as well.
Now, unfortunately, we don't have Jamie for an outro, so where I'm going.
And neither of us looked up an outro, so yeah.
we're not that good at that. I think Jamie is the perfect person, so hopefully next time.
Indeed, he'll be back next time, I'm sure.
So that leaves me to say thank you very much for listening. If you've liked what you've listened to, then the best way to help us out is to share the podcast and drop us a review and rating on whatever platform you're listening to. Just leave some stars, leave a rating. And obviously, ideally, tell your friends about us as well. So do share this far and wide. Always nice.
Yeah, podcast discoverability is rubbish. Do share the cast if you can.
Yeah.
It's really, really helpful.
So important. Otherwise, you can follow me on tabletopgamesblog.com on the blog. Links to social media is on there. Please also join the Discord if you have any news stories to contribute. If you have any chat you want to have, there's lots of things happening. Link, obviously, in the show notes. Lots of discussion going on, lots of interesting conversations. So please join the Discord. You can also follow, well, Ian, the Giant Brain on Blue Sky. Just search for Giant Brain, or I think it's giantbrain.co.uk. Instagram, Giant Brain UK. Facebook, the Giant Brain. And obviously, most importantly as well, the website giantbrain.co.uk with further links and information on there, including the archive of this podcast. So check that out. If you don't want to post news stories on Discord, if you want to contact us in confidence, please email giantbrainuk@gmail.com. We'll keep you anonymous. And please let us know if you have anything you want to share, especially given some of the stories maybe that have gone around recently. So yeah, that's it. Thanks very much for listening. And hopefully we'll see you again on here again, or you listening to us again in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time, folks. We'll be finding out if Ryan Dancy is still accountable. Stay tuned.